Straight to the Center Circle Studio. Tim Van Horn goes studs up into the soccer world where no one is safe. The 18-yard box is wall-free. This is My Three Subs Podcast, a soccer odyssey with your manager, Tim Van Horn.
Premier League full of great action, and it looks like the top of the league has a familiar face, but a couple have you kind of scratching your heads like, haven't seen them there before. Who
this
are you?
This is weird.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little Premier League coming up. La Liga, Serie A in action as well. Ronaldo showing off his abs. The virus might have put quarantine 15 on others, but not so much on Ronaldo.
No. But the Rona is rampant in Liga MX.
We're going to talk about that as they're trying to plow through their fall season. MLS getting ready for some playoffs. We'll talk about that. And then we got to talk about the USL because most of the groups are settled, but the one 901 of season,
nope.
It's still a toss-up.
No little fun little marks next to the names. Nobody's clinched and nobody's got an X or a Y or a fun little letter thing.
By this week, there could be a little extra alphabet soup attached to Group G, but right now it is squeaky clean. We're squeaky clean, but we've got our socks and we got our shin guards on, and we are standing by in the tunnel, and we're getting ready for the first half, but just know in the second half, we got a guy that
classic.
Played with George Best.
Classic.
And yeah, we've got him and Gerd Müller.
Mm-hmm.
Look up World Cup history and see where Müller stands in the history of World Cup goal scorers.
He's,
the boy's a bit special. We've got one of his teammates, the former goalkeeper for the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, Steve Zurhuizen, joins us. And by the way, he was a lifetime friend of John Huska's. They grew up together. So we got some Huska stories. We got some George Best stories as well. We got so much more. Oh, and I guess we should probably put our cup in too because it could get rough and tumble in the final weeks of the USL season. Coming up next, this is My Three Subs.
We'll be back with today's kickoff from the Center Circle Studios. This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
Hey, it's Tim. Just reminding you, this podcast is now powered by Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters. Brody and I want all of our time going into making the podcast as entertaining and as interesting as possible for you. So that's why we ditched our old services, made the switch over to Podcave. This is the complete podcast management, combining all the tools we need to make the best shows we can, to make them available on all the platforms you use, and to always stay connected with you. Podcave provides unlimited audio storage, so all our episodes, new and the old ones, are always available whenever you want them. And our website, it's included and built into Podcave, so you always have a place to find us. It's that easy. Music and soundscapes we use on the show are professionally made and fully licensed by Podcave. We get email and text management tools to stay in touch with you, guest booking tools, episode planning tools. Podcave even includes customizable news feeds so that we can stay on top of the latest headlines with Podcave. It's all in one place, and it's all inclusive for just $49 a month. That's right, $49 a month. Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters. Save time and money with your first or next podcast. Don't be afraid. Give it a try. Use Podcave. That's podcave.com. That's P-O-D-C-A-V-E, podcave.com.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. We're underway from the Center Circle Studios.
I think we have to lead with the fact that West Ham scored 4 goals in a single match, let alone in a single month.
They're on top of the world!
Staying up. We're staying up. Oh, geez.
It's the little things, Tim. And you know what? You might be onto something. It is not too early or too late to really sit there and take a look at the possibility of a really good year for West Ham. I said it. I know. Because this is radio, Tim is like looking at me cross-eyed. Like, what did you just
Bowen say? Bowen with a brace, Jimenez with an own goal for Wolves, and Haller late in stoppage time.
Get it any way you can. Get it any way you can.
And you know what? I think the Moyes to Memphis rumors are now on ice because West Ham are staying up, baby. 4-0 over Wolves. That may have just killed the 901 dream.
I mean, you know, listen, good for West Ham. Okay, bad for us, good for West Ham.
West Ham now move to 11th in the standings. They're 1-1-3. The pride of London.
I have to get... Hey, listen, I got to take my laughs where I can get it.
You know, do it now. Do it now, because then, you know, in a couple months, you're probably right. They're probably sitting there going, please don't, please don't.
I had somebody on social media giving me stick about their club being so good and mine's not. It's like, okay, I'm in West Ham. I mean...
What do you want me to do, argue?
I mean, I got nothing. Okay, I mean, you don't even have to drop the microphone. You can gently place it down. I mean, that's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
But they did pick up a win. But before that, there was plenty of other action. Brighton and Man United got it started off. And, wow, Man United escaped.
Yeah.
Late. Whew. Late.
92nd, 91st?
100th minute.
100th minute. Good night.
A penalty was called right at the... at the final.
At the death.
Yeah, VAR, I guess, cutting some slack for Man United and Bruno Fernandes, who may be the world's best penalty kick taker.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's just amazing. So they won 3-2. Marcus Rashford also scored in that match for Manchester United. Later in that day, Crystal Palace, actually. Yeah, it was Crystal Palace and Everton. That was a back-and-forth game, and that had a little bit of everything. Dominic Calvert-Lewin picked up a goal for Everton. Richarlison, who we've talked about on since the beginning of this podcast, about how talented he is, he picked up a goal with a penalty kick. They ended up beating Crystal Palace 2-1, and that was actually a pretty good game. I mean, it was back-and-forth, and... You got two good managers there, Ancelotti, and then you've got... I always want to say enchilada. Ancelotti, and then...
I'm hungry.
And you've got Hodgson. Is it Hodgson? It's Hodgson.
Hodgson, yeah.
At Roy, Uncle Roy.
Yep.
Hodgson at Crystal Palace. But, he builds a strong defense, and it was a pretty good game. But Crystal Palace... Everton just looks good now.
Everton looks good. Crystal Palace is one of those that I'm just waiting for it to deteriorate. I'm waiting for it to fall apart.
I don't think that it will.
I'm just... whenever I watch them, I'm just waiting for that shoe to fall.
Well, if they sell Zaha, then it's over.
Yeah.
But until then, I think they got a chance. And then in the first 27 minutes in another match on Saturday morning, then you had West Brom just absolutely blitzing Chelsea and had them just
on the ropes.
But then in stoppage time, Tammy Abraham found an equalizer. They had 3 second half goals, and Chelsea salvaged a point against Slaven Bilic and West Ham. And that may come back to haunt West Brom toward the end of the season.
Tim, have you ever noticed how sharks, whenever you chum a water and sharks go crazy, they go absolute frenzy, right?
Yes.
That's exactly how Chelsea looked. They had chummed the water with that goal and Abraham finding the back of the net for the equalizer, but it was seriously like a frenzy from Chelsea.
I mean, first half it was West Brom. Second half it was all definitely Chelsea. Yeah,
all Chelsea.
Yeah. A good halftime talk by Frank Lampard. No doubt about that. Other matches on the day. Southampton getting past Burnley. You had Leeds with another win. This time it wasn't a seven-goal thriller. It was actually a battle of good goalkeeping. Leeds comes out on top 1-0. Newcastle and Tottenham. Tottenham with a wasted opportunity to really put Newcastle away in the first half. The backup keeper for Newcastle played lights out, and that was 1-1. Aston Villa over Fulham, as you have two relegation contenders going at it. Fulham already looks like they're in deep trouble early on. And then on the Sunday, I skipped ahead a little bit. What about Leicester City with Jamie Vardy? Jeez Louise.
He does like to party, as you used to say, and he's going to be doing it a lot this year.
The problem, a hat trick for Vardy, Madison, Tielemans with a goal. The problem for Man City is they don't have... they didn't have Gabriel Jesus for this match. They had really no striker. They went with Riyad Mahrez. He did pick up a goal early in the match, but
he couldn't sustain it. And I think that's where, you know, you're starting to see the wear and tear in City. And I don't want to call it a fitness thing, because it's not a fitness thing. It's just the pedal just could not stay down on the floor.
What annoys me is when you get people that lean too much on possession as a statistics.
Oh, yeah.
As one of the statistics.
Yeah, when are we going to figure out that doesn't mean anything?
In this match, Manchester City had 72% possession and had had 400 more passes in the match.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, Yeah, good. You passed it really well. Too bad you couldn't pass it into the back of the net.
Shots, possession, all that. That is basically the popular vote.
Yeah.
The goals are the Electoral College. And Leicester City got the 270.
Dun, 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 dun. There's what you are stuck with.
So Leicester City on top right now with Everton and one other club with 9 points. And that other club would be Liverpool after what looked to be a pretty good match against Arsenal.
Well, yeah. It was a fun match, I'll tell you that much. I mean, did not go the way of Arsenal fans or, you know, for the Gunners. But
you drew first blood, though.
Yes, yes. I will say this, though. After watching that Liverpool-Arsenal game, Liverpool is that damn good. Like, believe all of the hype from Liverpool. It is true. They are good. And I don't know what makes them so good. It's just, they are playing so... They picked up right where they left off, Tim.
I mean, when you've got all three up front looking good. You got Salah, Firmino, and then, of course, Mane scored a goal. Mane. But in Memphis, we say Mane. But he's the one that had almost the immediate response to the Lacazette goal.
Yeah, Lacazette puts one away. We're thinking, hey, this is great. Mane comes along and is like, not so fast, pal. Anything you can do, I can do better. And I think that's what is like the coup de grace for Liverpool is anything you can do, I can do so much better. And just watch me do it.
They have a dangerous mindset there that it's always, well, what can I do? How can I contribute to this win?
Yeah.
And then Andy Robertson scores a few minutes later.
Yep.
And then Jota, the new guy. He came from Wolves, I think?
Somewhere like that.
Anyway, a rare transfer pickup for Liverpool. And he was able to pound home the final nail in the coffin.
It was a really good match. It was just even better to watch a Liverpool squad play as a squad, as a complete team. The communication on that pitch is unbelievable with Liverpool.
Are you okay with Arsenal right now?
I mean,
dropping to Liverpool, I mean,
I'm not that mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, after watching the match, you can't be. You literally can't be. That's just good soccer all the way around from Liverpool. And so to lose to a club like that, I'm fine with.
How about this for a top eight, top seven? Leicester, Liverpool. Okay. No surprise.
Yeah, but it won't stay like that.
You know, Leicester City has tightened up. I mean, they're better than last year.
Not sustainable in comparison, though.
So Liverpool, 9 points. Everton, 9 points. I think they're top six material. I don't know if they're top four material. I do like how Calvert-Lewin has continued to improve year over year.
Yes.
There are some things that Everton still do that will probably eventually haunt them where they'll drop points.
Again.
And then you look at four through seven, and this is the funny group. You've got Arsenal there, which obviously,
I believe five is actually there. I think pretty true.
And then around them, they've got tied on points: Aston Villa, Crystal Palace, and Leeds United. That just
is weird, right? Aston Villa above Arsenal right now is weird.
We're now back to like 1995.
Yeah, right. it's just awkward to see Aston Villa that high up. Crystal Palace, I kind of believe, but Leeds up right up there with them, rounding out what is that, seven?
Yeah.
And wow, you know, this is weird, right?
Yeah, this is totally strange.
I can't even look at Leeds and know who that is. Yeah. I can't look at the logo, you know.
It is you have to kind of squint a little bit. It looks like it's a Spanish club or something. So you've got those top seven, and then you look at the bottom four. West Brom has that point. They should have had three in that match, but then you got Burnley. A lot of people said heading into this year that Burnley pretty much ran out of steam at the end of last year and would be candidates to stay down toward the bottom, which is what they're doing so far. Sheffield United, very surprised
that they are down
at the very bottom. And as I look at this, am I reading this correctly? They are the only club in the Premier League that have not scored a goal yet. They haven't scored a damn goal yet.
Wait, is Fulham? Wait.
Sheffield. Fulham has scored
goals. Fulham has scored a goal. Yeah, Sheffield hasn't scored a goal. How is Sheffield above Fulham and they haven't scored a goal?
Goal differential.
Oh, okay.
Fulham -7. Sheffield United has only conceded. Fulham, to Sheffield United's credit, they've only conceded four.
Yeah, but you haven't scored a single time. You don't know what that sounds like. You don't know how to celebrate.
Yeah.
Come on, 901 FC. I mean, Sheffield United.
Yeah, I the Blades are just...
Too soon? Come on.
So let's talk about Fulham. Let's talk about Fulham. All right, Fulham have shipped 10. You know, they've had a couple of high scoring games that they've been on the short end of the stick of. They got Mitrovic. He can score goals, but right now they're just leaking at the back. I mean, it's just. I would suspect Sheffield United will start climbing the table. If they can pick up a couple of goals, their defense is tight enough where they can climb out of this. So,
unfortunately, Fulham, though, it took a page out of the Titanic book, and they're just that band playing on the end of the Titanic. They're in a sinking ship, man.
But I think they may be just... Are they happy to just be there and collect the money?
I mean, you know... just ride it out until it's over.
Yeah, you know, what do you do?
Eventually you'll freeze to death. Come on.
At least you'll be numb.
Right.
Let's, what do you say we move on to, you want to go to Serie A? Let's go to Serie A.
Oh, Serie A.
Can you do Serie A?
Yeah.
Let's do that. Ronaldo's been showing his abs off lately.
Looking in the mirror.
He picked up another couple of goals for Juventus at the weekend, and they needed them because they were down to 10 men, and he scored a penalty in the 44th, and then he followed up with another goal in the 69th. They drew with Roma 2-2, but he continues to just roll right along. You got Napoli just completely...
Napoli's rolling, man.
Yeah, they blew out Genoa. AC Milan picked up a win. You've got, I'm trying to see, Inter Milan and Fiorentina. I saw a bit of that match over the weekend, and that was a high score. I think that one ended up 4-3. Yes, it ended up 4-3. Lukaku with another goal. Martinez with another goal.
Lukaku got a raw deal in the Premier League, and now he's showing out in Serie A. Good for him.
A little bit of a different league. I think they played him maybe with the way that he plays. I think it just didn't fit at Manchester United. I thought he was good at Everton.
Oh, no. He was great at Everton.
He was good for Belgium.
Yeah. But he's even better in Serie A.
Yeah.
This is a perfect league for him.
Yeah. So Inter Milan picked up a win, but Fiorentina, that was an absolutely entertaining match. Lazio, of course, continuing their ways. They beat Cagliari. Ciro Immobile picks up another goal for them. But, of course, all these leagues really just getting started, a couple of games under the belt.
Yeah. I mean, I can't see AC Milan staying two for long, you know, and Napoli staying one.
You got Napoli at one, Verona now tied, but technically second on goal differential. Then you got Milan behind them, all three with 6 points. You've got Juventus and Sassuolo at 4 points, and then Atalanta, Lazio, Milan, and more at three. And that's because most of the league has only played one match.
Yeah, so, you know.
Brand new. So we'll move on from Serie A and move over to La Liga.
The boots are still squeaking.
They are. And Lionel Messi, of course, back to his magical ways.
He had a really emotional post a while back. A couple of his teammates are not playing with him anymore. And it was very emotional to see him play against some of his former teammates. And... You know, I think that's honestly probably one of the things that he was looking at maybe getting out of the whole league. You know, I know my team, my club is not going to stay my club. And so how do I salvage that memory, not play against them, but to just exit completely?
The standings for La Liga are as odd as the feelings that Messi probably has at missing his players. I don't mean in a wrong way. I'm just saying he has been part of a dynasty there for so long that once you break up the band, it is kind of odd. Even when Peter Gabriel gets back with Genesis, you know, you with Leo Messi and the guys, you know, playing against each other, it's still a little awkward. Right. You've got Real Sociedad. It's at the top of the table right now with 6 points tied with Real Betis and Granada.
Yeah.
But Real Sociedad's played, they're in the midst of their fourth match as we speak. They're playing Valencia. You got Betis and Granada have already played three. Valencia's in their fourth, but you've got Real Madrid with 2 matches only played. Sevilla, Barcelona have only played 1 match. Right now, they're playing a little bit of catch up in La Liga.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, the table's... Yeah, the Rona. And the table's just too young to really pull anything from. You know, you don't have that with a lot of the clubs. You don't have the week-to-week match because of the Rona.
Has FIFA 21 come out yet? And do they have the quarantine mode? where players can randomly have to sit out for two matches?
Yeah, no, not yet. Okay. They haven't put that patch in yet.
Okay.
I'm willing to pay for that patch.
That would be a fun patch to
just
have.
Just because, I mean, you know, it'll make everything interesting.
Especially if you're playing a career mode, or if you're playing against somebody and then randomly the Rona just pops up. It's like, oh, the little 8-year-old kid that you're playing, you know, over three continents over can't play with Messi. It's like, ah,
sucker.
You little brat.
or you go to play a match, right? And you can't. The match has been canceled because too many players got the Rona.
Yeah. or it could be the match is being played, but because of overly stringent health department regulations, you only have about 50 people in the crowd, so the volume mode is like it automatically turns itself way down on crowd noise because of the health department.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many things that they could do with that.
Man, they could have had so much fun with that.
Yeah. Bundesliga.
Yeah. We got to talk about some of those US men's national team players over there.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, we got some dogs over there, man.
You got Reyna over there and Gio, Tyler Adams.
How about Gio Reyna? I hear he's getting offers already from other clubs.
Why not?
Yeah.
The man is getting the job done over there in Bundesliga.
Yeah, and to correct somebody who was trying to say something in a direct message chat, no, he is not the son of Pepe Reyna. He is the son of Claudio Reyna.
Yeah. But U.S. men's national team player nonetheless. And I can't wait for that club to get, you know, that national team to really get going.
Yeah, and then you got...
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good guys over there. I mean, you got Josh Sargent, too.
Sargent, yeah.
Is in the mix. And you mentioned Tyler Adams. Gosh, there's a handful of others. And then you got Serginho Dest, who's still over in the first division of the Netherlands.
Yeah, he's not in Bundesliga yet. No.
But over the weekend, you had Bayer Leverkusen and Leipzig drawing one apiece. You had
here's where I get to butcher all the names.
I will try this: Union Berlin and Mönchengladbach at one apiece.
Yep, Zipper Gladbach.
Then you get thank you. Stuttgart blew out Mainz. Mainz somehow always stays in the Bundesliga.
How'd you get Mainz out of that?
it just is. Just trust me.
Clearly, this guy didn't take German.
Werder Bremen 3-1 over Schalke.
Mm-hmm.
And Fuhlkrug had a
that's not what I would have said.
Because there's the umlaut.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And he got the hat trick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. What were you going to say?
Nope.
Nothing. No comment.
Moving on.
All right. Moving on. Hoffenheim blew out Bayern Munich. That was the score that drew my attention over the weekend.
Yeah. And Hoffenheim sitting on the top of the table right now, too.
Hoffenheim only had 28% in possession in the match. Shot for shot, though. They were pretty much tit for tat, 17-16. So Hoffenheim was definitely aggressive when they had the ball and had, apparently, it looks like plenty of opportunities to counter. They saw something in Bayern and just sat back. It's like, come on down here, boys. Let me take this soccer ball off your feet, and then we'll just go the other way real quickly. Yeah. We won't keep it long, we promise.
It wasn't even like a counter, either. It was just... We're going to go. We're going to take this, and we'll give it right back. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Some of these matches, I mean, it works. It may not be sexy soccer sometimes. Mm. You're not keeping possession.
If you're getting the job done, does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter at all.
I mean, nobody remembers, well.
I can't say that. Go back to the Electoral College. It's the goals.
Yeah.
The goals is what matters.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you're hoisting a trophy, not hoisting, you know, a highlight reel. So, you know, get the job done, and then you can have your fun, you know. So, good job, Hoffenheim.
Yeah.
David Hoffenheim.
What say we take a trip back a few time zones back to the West and talk about the Americas?
America.
How about that? Where you want to go? You want to go to Mexico?
Let's go to Mexico.
All right. Give me some Liga MX's.
All right. Well, first, let's start it with the Rona news in Liga MX. And Club Tijuana confirming 30 new cases of COVID in that club.
Wow.
I mean, anybody left? Bueller will wait. So Club Tijuana obviously going to struggle.
They probably got in San Diego.
Probably. It's the water. So let's just take a look at the table. Because they have played a lot.
How many matches? Now, I get this mixed up. In the fall, is it the Clausura or Apertura? And if you don't know the answer, that's okay. Just say, I don't know.
No entiendo.
Okay. All right.
But let's just take a look at the table. You have Leon at 27 points, leading the top. Then you got Cruz Azul leading at 26. That's 1-2 right there. Bang, bang. And from then on out, you've got a bunch of clubs dealing with a lot of the Rona, and you also have clubs dealing with the call-up. I will go to Chivas for this one. As the America Stars got called up for the Mexico squad, they're at Chivas. So you might have a little bit of juggling going on there at Chivas.
Okay.
And the Americas. So should be rather interesting for that.
All right, so Liga MX, which you can catch oftentimes on Fox Sports 1, on Sling and other devices.
Oh, I just want to bring this up real quick.
Yeah.
The club Tijuana boss, okay, coaches via Zoom to his players. See this?
What?
He stands outside of his place to coach his players via Zoom.
Who is the coach?
What's his name? Pablo Guidi? Yeah. Anyway, he coaches via Zoom. That's who's left over there. Pablo Guidi.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be Guidi.
All right. Well, how's it working for him?
Clearly.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Anyway, let's take a look. Trip up north.
Let's talk MLS. Yeah. I want to talk MLS because I want to talk about the standings. I mean, we can talk about a few scores.
And how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, you know.
Columbus.
Yeah. You know, looking at the standing now, Seattle was a winner over the weekend over Galaxy. LAFC continued to struggle. San Jose took care of them.
The Galaxy, man, they just like a rock, right? What happened?
Portland and Vancouver. Philadelphia over Inter Miami. Chicago defeated Atlanta United 2-0. It'll talk about Fall of the Mighty. I'm trying to see here for Chicago. He did not. Yes, Elliot Collier did get into that match.
Yay!
Yeah, we did. Former 901 FC-er Elliot Collier got in to play in their victory.
Didn't do much, but
yeah, we got in.
Got in.
Yeah, got his minutes. Standings, of course, they're broken down into West and East with playoffs coming soon. Over in the East, though, Columbus still holds that 2-point edge over Philadelphia.
Watch out for Philly,
and Toronto.
Though. Watch out for Philly. They're coming for you.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if...
And they're bringing Tommy Smith with them.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Columbus keeps slipping the way they have been, Philly, watch out, man. They're gunning for you.
Well, look who's not far behind. You've got Orlando City sitting in fourth, just 4 places back or 4 points back. And then you got a bit of a drop off there. You've got New England, New York City, and New York Red Bulls, and then Montreal Impact. But look who is now sitting there with a... Which this looks kind of with a game in hand, same number of points and better goal differential. Nashville sits ninth, just behind Montreal Impact. I don't know if it's, you know what, here's the first tiebreaker. I think it might be wins, and Montreal has 5 wins. Nashville has 4, but they're tied on points. But Nashville with a match in hand.
And
their next match is coming up Saturday against New England, which may be a winnable match. And
not out of the realm of possibility. Is that in Nissan?
This match is going to be up in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium. And then they have a quick turnaround and play Minnesota at Nissan Stadium Tuesday night.
Do they still call that LP Field or they call it the Coliseum over there in Nashville?
I think it's the Adelphia.
Is it?
Remember that?
Yeah,
it was the Adelphia. But they've got a quick turnaround, and then at the weekend, then they've got Sporting Kansas City on the road, and then they've got another quick turnaround against Houston Dynamo. Man. So it's going to be bang, 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 rapid fire, and
thankfully strap up those boots, man.
Listen, and expect Walker Zimmerman, Joe Willis to be playing as many minutes as possible back there on the back line,
but playing lights out.
Yeah, they're playing. Yeah, they're very steady.
They're playing great.
Yeah.
Especially at home.
And that's nice to see. I mean, I love them getting goals. I love that there's several different guys that are actually chipping in. Mm-hmm. But I do appreciate the fact that Gary Smith continues to build a steady defense.
What's over there with Seattle and Portland, though? Can we talk about that for a minute? Because tied up points, right? And I know you brought it up that they were tied on points, Seattle and Portland.
Yeah.
But can they sustain it? Because, you know, it's just the way of the world right now.
Wow.
And I say that because you have Sporting Kansas City.
I say at least, I think they both finish 1-2, and here's why I think so. I think Sporting Kansas City will be right there to push them. Sporting's always kind of like the outside looking in. Yeah. They'll push. FC Dallas, and I've followed FC Dallas now for 13, 14 years, they tend to peter out at the very end of the season. I don't know why, and maybe there's a change mentality. What really surprises me is that right, like sitting there on Dallas's shoulder in Sporting KC, are Minnesota and Colorado. Colorado was almost a joke last year.
Yeah, and all of a sudden now, like what happened? And I guess maybe it's because Real Salt Lake not getting the job done. And they used to be fire, but I think with Real, you can attribute that to selling out every single match there at Salt Lake City.
At Rio Tinto.
And they're just not doing it.
I just like saying Rio Tinto.
But yeah, I think a lot of them had the crowd to back them up. They got juiced and amped from those crowds. And now when you don't have it, you start to see a lot of the flaw.
LAFC struggling. They're in seventh right now.
There's no reason why they should be.
Yeah.
Them and Galaxy, I don't think there's any reason why the LA team should be so bad.
Well, quite a bit of the reason for LAFC is we just don't get to see Will Ferrell as much.
True.
I think there's a bit of that. The Will Ferrell factor has not been accounted for, and that buys you at least 4 points in a season, which would easily put them up to third.
Right. Right. He's probably too busy driving cars and, you know, Talladega Nights too.
That's right.
Shaking and bacon.
Yep. El Diablo and the Magic Man. All right, let's move on to USL.
Yeah.
And a big story over the weekend. More playoff spots are getting clinched, but the biggest non-playoff story is the fact that Memphis 901 FC, in this tweet, just kind of took me aback a couple of hours before the match. Of course, they match on the road at Charlotte Independence. Yeah. Charlotte battling with Birmingham to not only be in the playoffs, but to win Group G. Those two are already guaranteed their playoff spots.
No one's clinched, though.
No one's clinched. Well, I guess what? Mathematically, does North Carolina have a shot? Are you saying nobody's clinched the...
Nobody's clinched, period. This one, Group G is so wide open. It's one of the few groups left that has no one with a little Y or an X by them.
So North Carolina, technically, if they win out...
Could make it in.
And Birmingham and Charlotte lose out.
I think Birmingham would take... Well... Okay, so you've got...
There's two... How many matches are left for these clubs?
Two apiece, I think. I don't know where I'm looking for that. You have points... you have 16 points from North Carolina.
No, that's... Is it points?
Yeah, that's points.
Okay.
16.
Why don't you add up wins, losses, and draws, Brody?
Yeah, but that's math.
Just spit them out to me. I'll get the sum for you.
Okay. Got your abacus?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. North Carolina's got the 5 wins, 7 losses, one draw.
Okay, so that would be 13.
Okay. Oh, my God. Look at how fast he did that. All right. Charlotte. You ready for this one?
Yep.
Math wise.
Bring it to me.
7 wins, 4 losses, 4 draws.
Okay, so they have one match to go. They've played 15.
Okay. All right. Birmingham Legion, 7 wins, 4 losses, 4 draws. Go.
It's the same, isn't it? 15?
15.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's, yeah.
Okay.
8 and 7.
What are the points?
Birmingham's leading. Well, Birmingham and Charlotte are tied at 25.
Okay.
Carolina's got 16.
Okay. So Carolina has to essentially win out. And Birmingham and Charlotte have to...
Lose out.
Yes. Or...
And that's possible right now.
And it may depend on the number of wins and goal differential as well. They're, essentially, all Charlotte and Birmingham need...
Draws right now.
Yeah. Anything. Anything will do.
Here's the bottom line, though, Tim. It's possible because the impossible, which we thought was impossible this weekend, both Birmingham and Charlotte lost.
They did.
And it wasn't like a last-minute come-from-behind victory from either club. Birmingham lost soundly.
They did.
To North Carolina. Charlotte lost soundly to Memphis 901 FC.
Let's get to that story now. And yes, technically North Carolina FC is still in it, but the reality, the likelihood is we're probably going to be looking at Birmingham and Charlotte. But let's look at 901 FC and this tweet that I got a couple of hours before kickoff from the team. That
do I need the abacus anymore?
No. You don't need the abacus, and you don't need the protractor. In regards to four players not suiting up, being eligible for the match for violation of team rules, four players on the club were not made available for the match due to that, which the team and it was interesting to see that because I thought, okay. Okay, so we've got that.
We've also got
then my question is, but here's my follow-up question to that at the time was, now did this happen in Memphis or did it happen on the road? But when you look a little bit later and they post the lineup, you can see obviously whatever happened with the club happened on the road in Charlotte, because you had a total of 14 players available for selection for Ben Pearman. You had your starting 11, and then you had three subs on the bench. Finally, three subs. I like that. Wow, three subs.
But and we used all three.
And no backup goalkeeper.
Right.
So Pierre Da Silva, Jean-Christophe Kofi, Rafa Mensingen, and Mark Segbers.
They were
declared ineligible due to violation of team rules. And
now, we could speculate on what that is, but I don't think we should hit that with a stick. A 10-foot pole, I don't think we should hit.
No, because we have no idea.
There's nothing there.
And then you wonder, Matt Hundley, Jim Barkai, listed on the injury report. Mm-hmm. Where's Tim Howard? Where's Mark Birch?
Well, Tim Howard is calling the games on NBC.
Okay.
So he's accounted for. Mark Birch.
I would say that's an excused absence, because when he left, the contingency was Barkai and
Barkai
and Haig.
Yeah, and Jimmy Haig. But Barkai apparently got injured maybe during the week. Did he even travel with the club? He wasn't listed in one of the four. He, is listed with the injury. So it's safe to assume that maybe he got injured later in the week at a practice or something.
Yeah, I think so. Which sucks, because really, at that point, he's looking at maybe getting at some point in the next week or two, maybe his first opportunity to play in a league match. He played in the Pachuca exhibition for 35 minutes or so.
Something like that. With Birch, it's interesting because he's listed in injury.
No, he was not listed.
Oh, he's not listed at all. He's just fallen off the map, unaccounted for. A couple weeks ago, we had the came down with the tested positive
for the Rona.
For the Rona,
but we don't know it.
We don't know who it is. I mean, we're process of elimination here. You know, it could be. He is star him.
It could have been Hundley.
Could have been Hundley, but he's still listed an injury.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So Birch is not listed, which I guess in the protocols, you know, if you come down positive, you have to sit, 14 days? That's the season.
Yeah, so we don't know.
We don't know.
But it would also have it would lead one to believe that because of HIPAA laws, you really couldn't say specifically
no.
Who.
No, you couldn't.
But it does leave you with basically figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're doing now. We're process of elimination with these injuries and everything like that. If he's not being listed at all, he's just not there. Like, he didn't get sold.
No.
We didn't transfer him. He didn't fall off the map. So, you know, it's safe to assume.
So let's talk about the game. Good grief.
Can we talk about the game? And can we talk about that Jose Baxter goal? Please vote that as the goal of the week.
Jose.
Holy schmoly.
A nice weighted pass from KMB. Sent it over to Baxter. A couple of touches. Sets it up. Basically, he could have just called bank shot because he went upper 90. Beautiful goal.
Bent that thing in. I mean, you couldn't. You dream about those. You know, like, I'm going to hit it and this is how it's going to go. And you're, you know, FIFA 21-ing that shot. You know, that was something in the storybooks. Please vote that as the goal of the week, because that was gorgeous.
It was gorgeous. And then Cal Jennings.
Follow that up with Cal Jennings.
Couple of goals.
Two
one
minutes
early
later.
On. And then, yep. And then late in the match, he essentially took the ball just outside the center circle.
Yeah.
Dribbled, created his own shot from about 23 yards out, buried it, which made it 3-1 after an early Dane Kelly goal.
Yeah.
And 901 FC got the win 3-1.
Yeah.
Ben Pearman's first match as head coach of the club.
Don't recommend the plaid shirt, weird tie combo, Ben, but, you know, hey. Cool.
It is now a lucky shirt. If he wears it again, you know what? More
don't
power
wash
to you.
It. Wear it again.
Wear it again. And congratulations to Cal Jennings. This coming yeah. down today, he is on the USL Championship Team of the Week.
That is something, though, that Cal Jennings can do really, really well, is create his own opportunity. And he's done it how many times in the week so far where he's created his own opportunity, whether it's because of it felt like a slot play or whatever, but he created that himself, comes out with the
ball. I don't know if he's inexperienced or if I just don't understand, but sometimes when he's got the ball or moving, I have no idea what he's going to do next. And that's actually a good thing.
Yes, I don't think the defenders do either.
It's like a brand new pitcher in Major League Baseball. First time around, extremely difficult to hit because you have no idea what's coming next.
Yeah. But
He's a good finisher.
He's a good finisher, but to a point, I don't think he knows. And he's just creating it on the fly.
And that's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. He's freestyling. He's wheeling and dealing.
The mustache is just flopping in the air.
He's looking like a pirate gorgeous. Swashbuckler,
absolutely.
Man. I love it.
Absolutely. So congratulations to Cal Jennings. Congratulations to Ben Pearman.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Memphis 901 FC. Stacked against the odds and pulled out 3 points. Coming up next, we've got Fort Lauderdale Strikers alum. He was a goalkeeper back in the late 70s. He even played a little bit of indoor, too. He played with George Best, and he played with the Peruvian Pele. We've got Steve Zerhuizen next on My Three Subs.
And that takes us to the half. More next on My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
When you're buying or selling a home, it can be one of the most stressful times of your life. When you're purchasing a home, it's one of the biggest investments you'll ever make, and you want to get it right, and you want to know that you got it at a fair price and not have buyer's remorse as you're moving those boxes into the house. If you're selling, you want to make sure you get a good price for it, and you're able to move on quickly and move on to your next stop in life. I'm Tim Van Horn, licensed realtor in Tennessee and Mississippi with Cry Like Realtors. My number is 901-756-8900 in my office, or you can always call me on my cell 901-262-5000. I'm relocation certified, and whether you're moving around the block or around the world, I can help you get where you're going. If you're thinking of selling your home, give me a call. I'll put together a marketing plan that'll help you put that sold sign in the front yard faster. If you're thinking of buying a home, give me a call or check me out online at timvanhorn.com for a personalized home search. And I never, I mean never, charge a fee to work with buyers. So give me a call at my office, 901-756-8900, or on my cell at 262-5000. You can always find me on the website at timvanhorn.com. That's timvanhorn.com. For Tim Van Horn, Cry Like Realtors.
There's the whistle. Second half, My Three Subs action from the Center Circle Studios.
Very excited to have today's guest on as he played in the North American Soccer League for the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. He played with Gerd Mueller. He also played with a guy named George Best. Ever heard of him? And had a nice career in his own right. And not only that, he was lifelong friends with a previous guest of ours who recently passed away, John Huska. So we've got a lot to talk about with our guest today. And we say a big My Three Subs hello to Steve Zerhuizen. Steve, thanks for joining us today. It's an honor to have you on. How you doing?
I'm fine, Tim. It's very nice to talk to you again. And thanks for the warm welcome. I appreciate it.
You know, if people were to look on Wikipedia, they would be able to see you spent time with the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. But there's so much more to your story before ever taking the professional pitch. And I'd love to touch on some of the great stories and some of your times in the NASL. But I'd also kind of like to wind things back because your life story kind of runs almost parallel to one of our previous guests who recently passed away, John Huska. And it's my understanding that you guys share a lot more than just your timeline in the NASL and your proximity playing collegiate ball.
Yeah, John Huska was my best friend. We hit it off, I guess, when I was in second grade, moved into his neighborhood. And it was a long time ago, and we've been best friends ever since. We played multiple sports together, basketball, baseball, soccer. And I, to be honest, I think our first love, both of us, was basketball. You know, two goalkeepers, it was awful hard to beat us 2-on-2 because we were so quick with our hands even. And John was an excellent shooter. He could shoot the eyes out of the ball. But, you know, we shared the same elementary school. He lived three doors up across the street from me. The same high school. I transferred. I didn't go to the first high school with him together, but I transferred into his high school where he was, you know, all everything in soccer. And then in college, he was always a year ahead of me. So we had a nice rivalry going there. But then later on in life, I mean, I was his best man in his wedding to Belinda, and he was the best man in my wedding. So,
wow.
We were like, I hate the stereotype, but I would say we were like women sometimes. I mean, even up into our late 50s, we talked probably every day on the phone. So
Let's rewind back. If you don't mind, I'd love to ask you a little bit about your relationship with John. And then I definitely want to spend some significant time because you have your own professional career to be very proud of. And I want to talk about that. But just going back, John, when we had spoken in our podcast interview just a few months ago, he spoke very proudly of his family, of his mom, of his dad. And his family has a real good name in Baltimore, doesn't it?
Yeah, they do. His dad was a doctor, like a private doctor, family doctor, the old school. I mean, he actually had the black bag and made house calls and all that. And his mom had a distinguished career as well. I mean, she was like the head nurse at St. Joseph's Hospital, which is one of the leading hospitals, you know, in Maryland. And, John was a big family guy, and that shows on how he raised his kids. I mean, you know, family was everything to him. He was part of mine. I was part of his. So I'm still close friends with his sister living in Florida.
What do you think it was about John that you guys, you know, struck such a good, long lasting friendship? What was it about him? What were his qualities that's like, oh, OK, you know, I can hang out with this guy?
Well, I guess when you're kids, you really don't know. I mean, I'm new to a neighborhood, and John was like the first kid who was really my age. And so that was probably the initial thing. And actually, we had some battles in the beginning, you know, just, you know, over turf and that kind of stuff. We both went to private school, you know, and that kind of thing. But, you know, you still, you know, everybody wants to be king of the hill. And I think, you know, what brought us together was our competitiveness and our drive that we both love sports. Other people in the neighborhood weren't as into sports, or at least organized sports, like we were. So I think that was probably the glue that kept us together.
Refresh my memory. Did you guys go to Calvert?
We went to Calvert Hall High School, which is a very good soccer program. You know, at the time it was, you know, the top two, the top three in the state of Maryland. I mean, it's still, you know, yearly in the polls, it's in the top 10, and, you know, it plays in a really tough private school, you know, division. John was like all metro, and which is the highest honor you can get here, not only all conference, but he was like, you know, the whole metropolitan area. I, on the other hand, when I transferred in as a junior, I was like a reserve midfielder. And from the grace of God, our coach saw something in me. And my senior year, I had to convince him to let me play goal. And then the rest is history. I got a scholarship to college playing goal and, you know, eventually drafted. So
how'd you feel about that initially when you were asked to make that switch? Because I know for a lot of people, it feels like you're settling, or, you know, they always put the fat kid in goal. But that's really a stereotype that really shouldn't be out there.
Well, I think that's the stereotype when they're younger, you know, when they're just, you know, learning how to play. And, you know, my philosophy today is every kid should learn to play the goal, just to feel what it like, just to have that feeling when you give up a goal, you know, when it's uneven, you know, both when it's unstoppable and, you know, when you should have stopped it. And when I coach today, I always tell the kids, you know, as a goalkeeper, you're the last man on defense. So if they got through you, it got through 10 other people first, yeah. You know, and you're the first person on offense. So, you know, I didn't feel that. I was a midfielder because I was a goalkeeper in emergency on my club team, and I also played in the midfield. When I went to Calvert Hall, John was a star, so I wanted to play, so I continued in the midfield. But my high school coach didn't know I could play. Back then, you didn't have scouts and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So my coach didn't know that I had played in the goal. So my senior year, while John was going to college, I told him I could play in the goal, and he still wouldn't let me. I had to convince the assistant coach to let me show him that I could play. So the rest was history.
Hey, what was the culture like being a soccer player in high school back then? I know, you know, today football and basketball are kind of the glory sports, and the soccer and the baseball guys kind of take second fiddle in a lot of places. What was it like at Calvert?
No. At Calvert Hall, soccer was, you know, well, it was a good athletic school. Baseball program excelled. Basketball excelled. They had one of the undefeated mythical seasons as well, back when Dunbar had it. We had a great lacrosse program, baseball. I mean, it was a known school for its sports. And soccer in particular, back then it was more ethnic, if you remember. I mean, Baltimore is a hodgepodge of, you know, Greeks, Italians, and, you know, a lot of people. So they were grandkids of the immigrants that came over here. So they learned soccer at an early age. We were lucky to be good athletes and to assimilate with them and just get better because of their history. And we assimilated to that, and we grew to love the game.
Steve Zerhuizen joining me on the podcast today, former Fort Lauderdale Strikers goalkeeper in the North American Soccer League, and we're talking about high school days. I know John went on to Loyola University, Maryland, and you took a similar path just a few miles down the road to compete in college.
Yeah, I went to UMBC. I actually had an opportunity to follow him at Loyola and to go back and be a field player. But it was a last-minute scholarship offer, and I had already committed to and given my word to my college coach at the time. Although I really wanted to go and follow John and play on the field, you know, my high school coach, because of my dad's, you know, encouraging me to speak to him, you know, about what my future would be. My high school coach told me flatly out. He said, number one, you gave your word to that man. And number two, goalkeeper is your future. So you go to UMBC. So, you know, that's what I did, and it really worked out well for me.
And for those that don't recall, UMBC, I believe, was the first 16 seed in the NCAA basketball tournament to knock off a number one seed a couple of years ago, right?
Yep, absolutely. They beat the University of Virginia, yep. That's a special notch in our belt, so to speak.
So how did college go for you? How was that experience? Did you guys play against each other, by the way? I know you were cross-town rivals, but did you guys actually physically get to play each other between the sticks?
Yeah, we played John and I were together 3 years in a row. Unfortunately for me, we lost all three times, but John had only played twice. But, you know, it really wasn't between John and I. I mean, we had no, you know, animosity. Both of us hoped we won and didn't want the other one to look bad. That was kind of like what we talked about before the game. But we played in what was called the Mason-Dixon Conference back then. It was all the local colleges, number one. So everyone knew everyone. So even if we weren't as talented as some of the other schools you played, like, you know, we had played teams like Villanova, like Eastern Carolina, and even like Rollins from Florida, James Madison. We played other schools. Playing, you know, being local and playing those rivals were probably the most difficult games.
I would guess there's an intensity because you guys know each other.
Exactly. And not only that, I don't know if you know, like, soccer has always been a hotbed in Maryland, especially in Baltimore. In 1975, another team in our conference, the University of Baltimore, they won the national championship. In 76, Loyola, where John and John won the national championship. And then in 1977, UMBC, we went to the first ever UMBC team to go to, you know, an NCAA, and we lost to Florida International University. We lost 2-1, and I had 22 saves that game, and that's still a record.
Are you still icing down after that?
Pardon me?
Are you still icing down after that? That's a lot of work, man.
Yeah, it was, but it was so much fun. And actually, it probably is what got me drafted, because I was drafted by Fort Lauderdale. And, they were only probably 15 miles from that campus. So I'm sure that had a lot to do with it.
Oh, that's incredible. Hey, just a side question for you, because they sure. were contemporaries on the Loyola squad, and he's big in Baltimore club soccer and professional. Did you happen to know, or do you know Kevin Healy? He's a past guest of ours, the general manager of the Harrisburg Heat in MASL.
Yes, I'm very good friends with Kevin. Kevin was in John's class at Calvert Hall, so I was with him at Calvert Hall High School, and also played for his dad at Mr. Pat Healy at the Post 38 in Dundalk, Maryland, like for 16-18 soccer. I mean, his dad was a legend, and Kevin's followed those footsteps and some.
Man,
Kevin and I coached. I've coached with him at the professional level with the old Baltimore Bays. That was in the old NPSL.
Okay.
And we were undefeated 3 years in a row and won 3 national championships. Kevin's he was a hell of a player, but he's even better as a coach and GM. I mean, he's got some great accomplishments.
Some good bloodlines right there, because you had his dad, Pat, and then he's got a son named Pat that just retired as a professional and is coaching now, right?
Yep. And when we were coaching the Bays in the late 90s, like say 95, 96, 97, Pat was, I don't even think he was in high school yet, and he was out practicing with us on the field, indoor, and could play. I mean, obviously he would get pushed around, but he could play. He knew where to put the ball. I mean, that kind of stuff, it's in the genes, and he's been around it. He was a student of the game, and obviously he accomplished many things as a soccer player, both in college and in a pros as a player, and now as a coach at Harrisburg.
So in 1979, Fort Lauderdale comes coming, right? You were part of the 79 draft. Because I think, John, if you're a year younger than John, I think John was drafted in 78 by Memphis, and then Fort Lauderdale came calling for you in 79?
Yep. Yep, I was a first round draft choice in 79. You know, we had Arnie Mauser in the goal. And then I was also drafted by the New York Arrows in back then it was the MISL, and they had Shep Messing. So I was kind of locked behind two guys and I kind of wanted to choose. So, you're 19 years old or 18 years old, knew, do I want to go to New York and play indoor or Fort Lauderdale and play outdoor? Well, Fort Lauderdale is a no-brainer for me, so I went to Fort Lauderdale, where I was blessed to play with some great players.
Yeah, Steve Zerhusen joining me on the podcast today. Arnie Mauser, of course, firmly entrenched as the veteran keeper there for Fort Lauderdale Strikers. Talk about walking in after having a successful high school career, successful college career, being drafted, being the new kid, and then being dropped into a locker room full of domestic and international stars. What was that like?
Well, it was definitely a culture shock, but not in a bad way. You kind of hung with the other Americans because they were all going through the same thing that you were going through. I particularly forge a friendship today with the first round draft choice in John's year. And actually they were good friends before I even met him. So it's kind of weird. But, when I met Arnie was, I'm 6'1". Arnie's like 6'3". And I'm wondering to myself, like, how could somebody be that big and be so quick and be able to do so much, So I just took it as a challenge to learn as much from him as I possibly could. And I was always confident because John was always good. That's one thing what we both did to each other is we gave each other confidence. We pushed each other in every sport we played. So I really wasn't overwhelmed, but I will say I knew my place, if that sounds odd. But
now Arnie had like like 30 or 35 caps for the U.S. national team, right? So I'm sure there was a lot to watch in him, but also, you know, being self-assured that when your time came, and you got some matches in that first year, didn't you? You played like 8 to 10 games even in your rookie year.
No, my rookie year, I only played one game.
Oh, okay.
That didn't turn out so well. I got in, I think Arnie got hurt late in the game, and we were playing in Detroit, and I let like 3 goals in. I was, you know, I was just thrown in, and I was overwhelmed. And, luckily, I guess Ron Newman, he stuck with me. And then my second year, we got a new head coach in Cor Vanderhart. He was part of the Clockwork Orange, the Dutch, internationals. And, he provided me a much more opportunity because midway, I guess early in the season, they traded Arnie away and actually gave me an opening to play. So
in Detroit, did they play in the Silver Dome? Wasn't around then, or
they
was
played?
It?
Yeah, we played. Yeah, we played in Pontiac Silver Dome.
Oh wow!
Yep. Actually, we played indoor in there. Can you imagine playing in that monstrous place where they have just the end zone, blocked off for an indoor rink, and so you only have fans on 3 sides? It was kind of odd.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely a weird experience.
What was it like playing on AstroTurf back in the day? I know field turf now has the rubber pellets and it's cushioned and it's a little bit better. Were you basically playing on glorified concrete?
That's exactly what it was. Well, the first year I was down there when we were preparing for road trips on AstroTurf, we would go, University of Miami had turf field, so we would be bused down there. And I'm telling you, it had to be 110 on the field. I mean, the soles of your feet were actually burning, and it was hard. I mean, it was hard. It was unforgiving for sure.
You mentioned Ron Newman. I think he came in after he was with Kyle Rote and the Dallas Tornado, I think. Didn't he come in from Dallas,
yeah.
I think?
Yep.
Now, who else was in that dressing room? Wasn't George Best in that locker room in 79?
Yes, he was. We got him. That was right when he was banned. FIFA banned him. So we signed him right before the season. We only had a few practices with him. And he came out and played, I mean, he was phenomenal. But, a lot of people, I think the athletes of today are much different than back then because, these guys like a George Best, you would think, you'd be afraid to talk to him. But, I used to play racquetball with him, at lunch pretty much every day. He was one of the nicest guys in the world, towards you. Not aloof or anything like that at all. Just a down to earth. He was as good as man as he was a player.
Did he enjoy his time in Fort Lauderdale, you think? I mean, I know he had been put through the ringer, playing in Europe for so many years and then came over here to the States. Do you think that was a good time? If he were alive today, he would say, you know what, coming to America was probably a good idea.
I think he would say that because, George's whole life was, he was a pioneer. I mean, if you read his story, I mean, he was like 16 years old when he, went to Man United and was so scared he went home, after the first tryout, and his father made him go back, to finish his tryout. And, he obviously made the team and, was a great player. But I think he came over here later in his career. But he still had the talent and the ability. And I think he got more of a worldwide recognition because soccer people would have known him, but other people who didn't, weren't in tune to soccer wouldn't have known him. But coming over here, they do. Now, I can tell you a great story if you want to hear a great George Best story.
Oh, I'd love to.
Well, this was one of, and I'll try to keep it clean. But
it's a podcast.
Was,
say whatever you want, Steve.
Okay. Well, we're on the, I'm sitting on the bench, our first or second game of the season, and George is on the field. And I guess it's maybe midway through the second half, Ron Newman is putting a substitute in. And we're watching the game, and he's putting a substitute in for George Best. And we're all looking at each other like, he's taking George out, So anyway, George's wife, Angela, at the time, happened to be a photographer on the field. She comes running over and yells at Ron, "Are you taking George out?" And Ron's like, "Yeah, yeah." So meanwhile, you know, they're telling George to come out. He's looking like on the field like me, and he's waving like, "No, I'm not coming off," you know? So Ron's like, "Yeah, yeah," you know, they're waving him off. So George starts walking across the field to the locker room. He wasn't going to come over. So finally, the ref's blowing a whistle, so George is walking over, and Angela's like, "Why are you taking George out?" And Ron Newman says, "Well, because he's not fit, you know." And Angela, her best quote ever, and I'll keep it clean, is, "Well, how do you think he's going to ever get fit, you know?" And so George is walking off, and he gets about 5 yards, and Ron goes to shake his hand like, you know, good match. George takes his shirt off and throws it in Ron's face. Now, if you know Ron Newman is in a three, you know, this is South Florida. It was a night game, but in a three-piece suit, you know, with the flower on the lapel. And, you know, he got this sweaty shirt all over him. So we're like dying on this, you know, I mean, you don't want to laugh. You don't want to, you know, after the game, the reporters ask him, like, you know, "Ron, like, you know, how are you going to control George? What do you think? I mean, he actually threw his shirt at you, you know." And Ron's the best quote ever: "Well, I always wanted to have one of Bestie's jerseys." I mean, it was awesome. You know, it was awesome. I mean, Ron played just in character. You know, George was George, and you know, it was fun. It was a good evening.
And that is so old school NASL to have the wife being one of the photographers on the pitch too. I mean that you could not have set that up any better. So on the bench, you said nobody would dare laugh. Would Ron have gotten hacked off at you for that?
Oh, right. Well, at least none of the Americans, you know, because, you know, we all wanted to keep our jobs, you know. But we, you know, we were all snickering and looking at each other with our eyes are wide open, you know. But it was a great story. It was a great thing to be a part of, let me tell you.
Yeah, and I think I misspoke earlier talking about your first season. I know that you played several games in your second season, but sandwiched between those, along came the NASL Indoor, right? Seemed like that was a spontaneous creation.
Yeah, I think it was. I think they saw that niche that the MISL was taking up, and they figured it would keep. Actually, Fort Lauderdale just used mostly the Americans because the foreign players, once they tried it, they didn't like it at all. I mean, it was much too physical from what they're used to. So here's another story. Our first practices are at an armory in Fort Lauderdale. And I'm sure you, wherever you're from, they have armories.
Yes.
Well, armories, it's a big room with a marble floor, you know, and that's what we're playing indoor in. And people are taking shots and they're going low in the corner. And Ron Newman is looking at me and I'm like, you know, like, and I'm like, I'm not going to dive on that. I'm not diving on this stuff, you know. So they brought mats out, that the goalie would have, you know, like in front of the goal, like two mats. So that was the big joke. Everybody would just hit the ball low. You'd go down for the ball, and it would hit the lip and then shoot right over top of you.
Oh, you know?
So, but it was funny. I mean, it was a shoestring budget. The Strikers were owned by Elizabeth Robbie, and we were a write-off for the Miami Dolphins. I mean, to be perfectly honest. So.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now, that season, I know your buddy John had a great season with the Memphis Rogues. They made it to the mini game of the three-game final in the league. How was the league for you, the league play itself? I'm assuming because of the budget, that was probably very regionalized. So you probably played Rodney Marsh and Wes McLeod and Tampa and those guys quite a bit.
Yeah, we played those guys quite a bit. We would play Tulsa. Actually, Tampa, the first week I was there, we played in Tampa. We had a tournament with like Tulsa and maybe Atlanta. But they were the teams, the Jacksonville T-Men at the time. They were the teams that we predominantly played. And yeah, they were good. We weren't as successful as we should because, like I said, we would be bringing new people in all the time because the older foreign players didn't want to play. Like Ray Hudson would play. I mean, you know, Ray's the radio voice. Arsena Gust and maybe some of those guys would play, but a whole lot of them, the real stars, really wouldn't play. So
Cabillas, did he skip out on that, or was he gone?
Cabillas never played. He didn't play indoor. But like one of his best friends, Nico Badanzi, who was Peruvian and a naturalized American citizen, he played, and he was a nice player. He excelled in indoor, but it really did help the Americans' indoor skills, outdoor skills, because you learn to keep the ball close and protect the ball.
You know, it really
was a good learning ground and confidence builder for the young Americans.
You know, after being a deputy for Arnie Mauser in outdoor, did it feel good to be back at the helm and be in goal and kind of maybe reestablish yourself as somebody that can be counted on the pitch?
Yeah, it was. And Arnie played too. Arnie did play. So we would go back and forth, and we're still good friends today. We still stay in touch. And he always helped me along the way and gave me confidence. But I did excel indoor in the fact that I almost had the first indoor shutout. I think we beat New England 6-1, and they finally scored a goal in the last, I guess it was when the last 3 minutes of the game.
Oh.
And then to know it, John went up to me, and later that week he got the first shutout in indoor.
Well, if it wasn't going to be you, might as well be you're the best man from your wedding.
Oh yeah, exactly. And we joked about that kind of stuff all the time. We actually, Kevin Healy arranged a Legends game in Baltimore to celebrate the Baltimore Blast 1983 championship.
Yeah.
And so what they did is they got a lot of the players from that era who played pro and who excelled in college. And we played a little exhibition game before the Blast game, you know, for their fans. And then they introduced their championship team. And John and I, before John, you know, I was up here, John was still living in South Carolina, but this was probably in the 90s. I don't remember exactly, but, John's like, you know, well, you've been up here organizing it. Why don't you start? And I'm like, John, you know, you got the decorated, you know, career, you start, you know what I mean? So, I mean, like there was never any, you know, negative, you know, motivation between either one of us. I mean, we celebrated each other's success, and John had a much more successful career. I mean, he played 10 years. I played the year my second year when I finally got a chance to play, I injured my back and I had back surgery. So at a young age, and then I played actually, when the indoor season came along, this was because we went to the soccer bowl. So I played in 8 games, I think, going up to the soccer bowl, and we won 6, and I had 2 shutouts. So I feel like I contributed to the soccer bowl team. But when that was over, you know, we go back to indoor, and I was, I guess, what's July? That started in October, November, and I'm back playing, you know, in the goal. And my coach at the time, Cor Vanderhart, thought, you know, that I wasn't getting down, like I was still having back problems. So he put me on the field. I was a field player indoor for a while, for about 5 games. But because we had signed Jan van Beveren, that's another name. He was, I think he's probably one of the best goalkeepers in the NASL ever. He was from Holland, and he was our soccer bowl goalkeeper at the time. But after a game or two of indoor, he was like, no, thank you. So, and he was older too. I mean, he was probably in his 30s when he came over. So, you know, when you're not familiar with playing and, you know, so I was put back in goal. And then later on, I was traded to the MISL Phoenix team on a Saturday night at halftime of my game. And they told me, and then
how does that work, by the way? Do you finish that match, or do you just say later, guys?
No, I did finish the match, and later after the game, they fired Vanderhart. So my agent called called the team and asked if, you know, because I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to go to Phoenix. I wanted to stay in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we didn't want to trade him, you know, so they rescinded it. So I got to stay. And then they hired, so I stayed through the rest of the indoor, and then they hired Eckhard Krautsen. He was the Olympic coach for Canada. And the year before, he was Houston's coach. And we had actually shut him out. I had actually played that game and shut his team out 2-0. Back when he had Kai Haskovy, nice player. And, you know, I thought I would get a shot. But I think because of my injury and my back that, you know, they could get other players and, you know, not have a liability.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and so once I was released, I was pretty much done. Here's another great story. I got released and, you know, Gerd Mueller comes to my room and he tells me, this isn't right, you know, because he thought I could still play. And he said he wanted to set me up with a second division team in Germany. But I was pretty much done. I figured, you know, there's so many of my friends in Baltimore had played and been released and then tried out for other teams. And I just figured, you know what? I had 3 years, you know, I knew I was never going to get rich. So let's go start my life, you know, my real life. So
you were,
I just had a different attitude, you know.
So you were 6-2 the year that you got to play those 8 matches. You guys went on to the Soccer Bowl. Yeah, I know you mentioned the 2 shutouts. What are some of the specific memories or some of the interactions with some of the players? Not just, I mean, Gerd Mueller, obviously, Kubias, George Best, but some of the guys on some of the other teams. Who are some of the guys you faced? Any memories of those? And anybody in particular that stands out?
Steve Moyer was a great player for California Surf. We were playing there when I was playing, and we were up like 3-0. And he scored a goal. He scored a great goal on me. And then next thing you know, they get a penalty shot. And now here I'm thinking I'm cruising, you know, to a nice game. And now the game's 3-2, and they're pressuring. So that was pretty crazy. Another is the first opportunity I got when Arnie Mauser, we were playing in New England. Arnie Mauser had a concussion. And so they put me in, I don't even remember first half, second half, doesn't really matter, on a corner kick. And,
oh God.
You know, a ball gets flighted out and, you know, it gets headed. Their guy, you know, chests it at the edge of the 18 and volleys it, you know, a full volley. Luckily, it was right at my head. And I mean, it would have taken my head off if I didn't get my hands up. And I still to this day is like, I remember like, get my hands up. It's stuck in my hands. And I always said, oh my God, you know, like I can do this, you know? And so I had a lot of confidence, you know, going into all that, you know, playing Washington in Fort Lauderdale, back when they had Sonny Askew, who was another big Baltimore talent, had a great career, played for the national team as well as a midfielder. High school, we played against each other. He was in our conference.
Was Cruyff and there at the also, time, Steve? Was Johan Cruyff
pardon?
There? Was Johan
Cruyff. Yeah, they had Johan Cruyff. Yeah. Yep. So, you know, like I said, I was really blessed to play against, you know, a lot of really, you know, really good players. You know, and then I got to meet Beckenbauer and Pelé, you know, in the Soccer Bowl. So, my only regret is I never got a lot of autographs. You know, I never wanted to make people feel, you know, like I always wanted to, respect them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As a, you know, because, like as a peer, even though they were, you know, light years better than more accomplished than me, you know, I just never wanted to denigrate my relationship with them by, you know, can I have your autograph? You know, but I regret it today because, you know, you tell people stories and they're like, yeah, like you knew him, you know, and then you pull out personal pictures where you're with them and, you know, it's, oh, wow, you know.
So what are you doing to stay in shape now, Steve?
Well, I still play soccer. I've had like 18 knee surgeries. I've had two total knees put in back in 2012. And I have a great orthopedic doctor up here at MedStar. His name's Henry Boucher. And he told me, you have no restrictions. And, you know, as an athlete, that's what you want to hear. Now, as soon as he left the room, his nurse said, don't listen to a word he said. You know, don't do this, this, and this. And my wife's like, listen to the nurse. But, you know, I run like 2 miles a day, usually do it at lunch or after work. And I play soccer, both indoor, one night a week with friends, all guys who used to play at a pretty high level. So we all, you know, and our ages range from 40s to actually one of the guys is in his 70s. You know, we just rent a pitch for an hour indoor and we play. And then Thursday night we have like, it's just a kind of a group of us go up. Some nights it could be 10 and we play 5-on-5. Other nights it's 25 and we're playing, you know, 11-on-11 with some subs.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, with ranging age groups. So, and I actually played in the tournament down in Florida last year on Martin Luther King weekend. We played in it's some Florida classic where they have teams like 40, 40, 45, 50, 55, 60. And I think it was even over 65. And we were all in our 60s playing over 55. And, you know, we were at 1-1-1. And I actually had to play goal because our goalkeeper, I think, had a have a hernia surgery. So we did really well. I was very happy the way I played. I didn't get hurt and didn't embarrass myself. So
hey, and the goalie technology has changed over the years, hasn't it? The gloves and the shirts and the pads and stuff, right?
Well, yeah, they do, but we had really good gloves, you know, when I was playing. And that kind of spoiled me because even today, I can't play in the goal without wearing gloves.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, here's another good story. We were practicing for this tournament. We play in an over 30 tournament every year up in New Jersey. It's over 30 tournament. And we're playing like 5-on-5, and I'm just being the last man. So when I knew I was going to play goal this year, so I said, you know, let me start, you know, trying to play. So people are hitting shots at me. I'm not wearing gloves. I'm not wearing any protection, and goals are going in, and I'm getting really pissed off at myself. You know what I mean? Because I came to that practice saying, you know what? Put your head in it today. Try to do that today. So I did, and I'm letting goals in like I'm a turnstile. And one goal goes in, and I just, you know, I started cussing to myself. And this guy turns around who we've played, but he doesn't know my history. And he's like, dude, like, don't worry about it, man. Like, you're not a goalie. And I said, well, actually, I am, you know. So. And people are amazed that I tell the story. But, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm 63 years old. I don't have anything to prove. I love playing the game.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Steve Zerhuizen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been an absolute honor. As I tell our listeners every time that we have someone from the MISL or NASL days, it's great to have you guys on. And thank you because, for a lot of our listeners, they're now the parents of kids that are coaching or are fans of soccer. And it was your generation in the 60s, 70s, and the 80s that helped spur the growth here in this country. And you may think it's not that big of a deal, but you did play a part in that. And want to thank you for taking time to share your stories with us and share a little bit about John as well. We love John on this podcast. And thank you for just kind of bringing it all to the table today.
Well, no problem. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Like I said, I was very fortunate to play in a time where professional soccer was available. There's a lot of people who were very talented that just never had that opportunity because there was no league available for them. So I do feel blessed. So,
you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that game, Sabutio. Do you remember that little tabletop game?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I always thought Fort Lauderdale had the coolest jerseys out of all the American teams in there. So I guess next time I play and I'm holding that green goalie stick, I guess I'll be Steve Zerhuizen.
There you go. Well, thank you, Tim. I appreciate it. And I hope it works out well for you.
More next on My Three Subs, A Soccer Odyssey. The Watchers have observed. The Council has convened. the gathering of geeks converges, and they're set to discuss everything happening in the geekdom.
Tank locked, loaded. Get the latest on everything in the geek universe with the Geek Patrol.
The Geek Patrol is on Geek Tank Radio.
That's what we call ourselves, sort of like a team.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. And we have added time to the podcast.
So looking at Group G, this is actually a very big match this Saturday for Birmingham Legion. And then on the other side of the table, North Carolina FC and Charlotte. That's a big match. The top two teams, they just basically get a point. They're clinched. For Memphis 901 FC, this is another proving ground for Ben Pearman, I think. It's such an odd thing because it's hard to tell if this is going to be enough of a sample size to if the ownership group is or is not convinced that he is the guy to succeed.
Well, I think it also is a good litmus test of the players, too. Who's playing? Who really wants to be here? And, you know, you saw it this past Saturday with the four guys out. We got the W. And is that because the chemistry of the players who were on the field? Is that because, you know, those guys who were out there sitting there saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to show out and show up. Yeah, better my chances of playing in the club next year.
They will have a chance coming up on Saturday night. The kickoff is at 7 o'clock at AutoZone Park. And this is about the time of year where, especially if it, because this may be the last game, maybe it's not the last game. We don't know yet because there could be a makeup game against North Carolina FC, but it could be the last match. So this is about the time where I guess they start having those conversations with the players on whether or not they're going to be kept or not. I don't think it immediately happens necessarily after the very last game. Maybe it happens shortly thereafter.
Yeah,
but I think right about now, they're probably letting some of the guys know, okay, you know, we want you back for next year. Maybe start negotiating.
Right.
But I have a feeling that they're going to use probably a butcher's knife rather than a scalpel, and there's probably going to be a lot of changes next year.
It'll be a different 901 FC squad next year. However, Tim, go back for a second. This could be the second to last game. If Memphis 901 FC decides to play spoiler, okay, beat Birmingham, which, by the way, this is going to potentially be a very bloody match.
Birmingham is coming into the is coming into the runway. They're not coming in hot.
Their
wings are kind of wobbling a little bit.
Right.
But they are going to be focused. They don't like us. Their fans don't like us.
No, there is no love lost between the cities, between the players. It was quite evident in the last match that, honestly, I was surprised that more red cards weren't handed out. But that being said, it is going to be one of those matches where this could be interesting. If Birmingham loses, then yes, 901 FC plays another game. It doesn't mean anything for us, but we could play spoiler again with North Carolina. Just to think, dash the hopes of North Carolina
It may not mean much for the team in the standings, but it could mean something to Ben Pearman.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you imagine Ben Pearman come in and win three of the four games he's managed? That'd be pretty spectacular, and that'd be quite a coup de grace, if you will, if he's not selected.
Especially if your opponents have something to play for.
Exactly. Exactly. And he's sitting there just playing spoiler the whole time. I'm going to be honest with you. If I'm Ben Pearman, I'm doing everything in my power to motivate, to captivate my club, to get that W.
I wonder if there'll be a Jim Barkai signing this weekend on the pitch. Maybe this is
that'd be fun.
We've never seen him play in a league match.
No, but he's been hurt.
Interesting. And then the follow-up question is, the four players that were ineligible for this past weekend, are they done for the year? Was it what they did so bad that they are done? Is this a one-match deal? I guess we find out around 5 o'clock on Saturday.
If I'm a betting man and I'm sitting here at Ben Pearman shoes, why do we need him? We didn't. I'm just going to put it out there. I'm sorry to say it like that. And I love Segbers. I love those guys. I love Kofi. And go with the winning formula.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
So
it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Saturday coming up, 7 o'clock kickoff.
Bloodbath.
It's going
to
be.
Come to the Thunderdome.
It's going to be a very physical match. It's it, it, you know, they may need, they may not be able to have extra subs, but they'll probably need extra athletic trainers. So
yes.
Somebody pitch in and give a solid to Angie. Yeah, help her out on Saturday night. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. Check us out on Twitter and on Facebook at My3Subs Podcast. Go to My3Subs Soccer Pod on Instagram and email us at My3SubsPodcast@gmail.com. And you can always go to our official website,
My3SubsPodcast.com.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great week. Go Memphis 901 FC.
Yeah,
go you know what the hell? Go Nashville SC as well.
Yeah.
Make those playoffs.
Boy, that's tough to say.
No, it's not. Road trip.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more My3Subs Podcast, a Soccer Odyssey.